I found this in Ganner room. Ganner me.
What is it?
Oh, it's
sick performance.
Welcome to Synthaholics, guys. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me guest hosting is Lydia Scherer.
Hey, guys. Good to be with you tonight.
And then we've got returning guest Larry Nemechek with us this evening.
Well, it's always good to be an RG with you guys.
The best.
No, thanks for having me back on, and you were just reminding me other side of the room there, that the last time, I guess the first time, or the last time anyway, it was monsooning in Houston for the Con of Wrath. So
the first time, but hopefully not the last time we had
yeah.
you on.
Well, that's great. So, but yeah, no monsoons tonight.
Here, no monsoons. Safe at home.
In darkish LA right now. So, right, yeah.
Darkish. It's very dark Buffalo right now outside the window. So, anything new going on with your Portal 47?
Oh, okay. Jumping right in. Well, let's see. When that was, we were talking in October. I think I had just launched, and since then we've picked up a lot more people. No, I'm kind of getting my feet wet. Like I said, it's kind of a multimedia experience there, so I'm trying to figure out the different appeals to people. But we've had on our telebriefing guests, we've had, which is just one component, we've had a lot of good people that, again, my point is to get people who haven't seen fans either through interviews or fans haven't seen them on a stage, just get a lot of real world voices and people who worked on the shows day to day, because everybody's heard from the actors and they've even heard from the writers and producers mm-hmm. and some of the major designers, and we'll have them. But like we've had Alan Sims, who was the maiden prop master from Next Generation through Voyager, who's a real hoot of a guy. And, you know, it's just part of bringing – well, I say Portal 47 is your insider's guide to a savvier fandom. So it's whether you're a new fan or an old fan or a bored fan or a fan who doesn't even know what you don't know and you're tired of the same old, same old. And not to knock all the great conventions and a lot of great podcasts and, you know, the good reading that you can do. But there's so much Star Trek that's out there that's the years are going by quickly. And I just want to try to get more to, you know, just open up my archives and my Rolodex and my front row seat and share that with as many people as possible and do it as a business, but hopefully for the, like I say, the cost of a movie night out of, you know, a month. So.
Yeah. I saw that. I was looking at the website, the Portal 47 today, and I saw you get like the 3-month package or like a year package to like kind of get you in the door.
Right. And for people that are timid, the 3-month is actually a little bit more than the monthly. But if you just to see what it's like, because there's more features in the calls. We have archival documents and file and audio and video from my files. And I have a lot of stuff that's never been out, which is, you know, where my Trekline on speaker CDs come from. But there's I have like 500-600 hours of audio that I need to get out and get digitized. But off the cassette tapes. But images and, you know, fun stuff and all that. And then and some discounts to if you're a bidder on Trekline Trunk and that kind of thing. And convention meetups, if people are in the area where I'm at a convention. And my God, the way 2016 is going, every little nook and cranny of the country is calling me to come be a library guest or something, which is really amazing.
Oh, wow.
It's kind of that's what I want to talk about, because 2016 is I knew it was going to be crazy, and it's crazy already all over the place. But yeah, and then my Trekland tours, which is not going to compete with our big Star Trek to Vegas tour that I do with Geek Nation Tours, but just mm-hmm. for people who are on vacation in LA and want a day trip. So I'm offering that on its own, and then this is going to be a side you get a, you know, like half off price if you're a Portal 47 person who comes to LA. So,
oh, that's awesome.
The whole bundle, yeah, portal47.net. The more I talk about it, the more I think I kill it sometimes. So, but I the thing, every time we have, especially the guests, I just love bringing people that no one's ever heard of who have tons of stories to tell and experiences and that kind of thing out to people. So, I really, I mean, however I can do that across the way, if it's live at a con or.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've seen a bunch of cons open up. I know there's one in New York that's happening, and there's one in Chicago, and I saw like one in, I think, Texas is opening up for the 50th anniversary. Like, they're doing them everywhere this year.
Well, and there's, and you know, like, the New York one is going to be a big licensed official type. It's not Creation, it's ReadPop that does New York Comic Con, and they've done some of the celebrations for Star Wars and all that.
And they do PAX East, which I've been to a couple times.
Yeah, yeah. There's some that are the big events, but what I was talking a minute ago, I mean, I've had three different just libraries find me, and they just wanted to do – they have a little events budget, and they do scheduled events, and they just wanted to do a Star Trek event this year because of the 50th. And I guess, you know, I'm a pretty cheap date, but – so they, you know, even though it's across the country, and then there's some small conventions that are reaching out as far as well as, you know, the ones that are good friends that I've gone to. And, of course – there's Comic-Con San Diego and Vegas Trek in Vegas, which is going to be huge.
5 days this year. That's insane.
I don't really mean to talk about 2016 and the 50th anniversary like it's an implied commercial for Donald Trump. I'm really not trying to do that, but it's almost irresistible because it is going to be huge.
It's yeah. There's so much so much happening with this year. I can't believe it. I'm going to try to hit either the Chicago or New York Con, money permitting. Hopefully I'll hit one of them.
Yeah.
I wanted to go to Vegas, but that's just not in the cards for me this year, unfortunately.
Well, you know, I remember the day like about 2012 or 2013 when I think I fell off my chair because I realized it's just one of those mental things. It was like coming up on the millennium, like coming up on 2000, when your head, you never thought, you know, just to say, how do you say a year 2001? Because, you know, 2001 is Space Odyssey and, you know, party like it's 1999 because that's the end of time. And how can you have a year start? You know, just your head has to do a trip to get through that, right? And the first time I realized that we were coming, oh, yeah, the 30th and the 35th and the 40th, that's all okay. But to say Star Trek had a 50th anniversary coming, which is kind of like, oh, my God, you know, Ermagerd.
Ermagerd.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, it was kind of like the countdown. But even by 2014, I was just thinking – this is going to be crazy. This is going to be insane. And then 2015, and about the time I got used to even thinking about it being the 50th, it really did take off. And people have been like panic buying tickets to Vegas and to the convention and the hotel rooms around there. And then our tour that we do every 2 years, the Big Geek Nation tourist tours.
Oh, yeah.
We have we've done two. The market has bared about doing it every 2 years so far until the demand goes totally up. But the debut year was 2012, and then 2014 we did a second one. And we had about 12, 13 people. So we're like at 24 for next year. Mm-hmm. And that's with adding another component that most people are doing. So you were talking about getting yourself out there. There are people – I hear from the British fans and the German fans, and people are all – there's just this vibe of people going bonkers. Like, if I'm going to go, I'm going to go for the 50th.
I mean, so that's what I was thinking, too.
Maybe you picked the time. And as I say, it was starting to bear down on me even about 2013, 2014. Even if I hear somebody say, you know, I've never been, and I'm going to go in the 50th. And I go, you know what you really ought to do? You should try to come in 2015 because it may be the last year that Vegas is sane.
Maybe, you know? Yeah, yeah.
So anyway, I mean, we're past that now. But, I, you know, but that, yeah, I'm glad to see these regional – big, huge conventions popping up. So, yeah, everybody can feel like that. But things like the concert tour, the orchestra,
you know,
Yeah, is touring around. And, you know, in fact, I said this the other day, back before they knew that there'd be a series, friends in CBS's licensed consumer products were setting out these things. And I don't know if you saw it, but there was a story in USA Today a couple of weeks ago. And it really got my eye because it was not a big, huge hyper licensed thing. They're basically they have several different smaller events before they wondered if they would have some big things come along. But now the momentum is starting to go that way, and some big ticket, big money items are coming in that are also big showpiece things. But before that, they set out having, you know, like TED Talks.
Yeah.
Okay. So one of the things they did kind of quietly, but it's going to be there, are things they're calling them Trek Talks. But basically, people from every walk of life who were inspired by Star Trek and were Trek fans, but now they're, you know, scientists and doctors and engineers, but also, you know, lawyers and politicians and ambassadors and anthropologists and psychologists and, you know, whatever walk of life, school teachers, whatever walk of life, they owe it to and being inspired to do it from Star Trek. And so they're going to be kind of like TED Talks around the, like at museums and libraries and science centers and university campuses or high schools even. Whatever.
That's fantastic. Yeah. I hadn't even heard of that. That's really cool.
I'll get you the link and put it. It was in USA Today, so it wasn't totally hidden. A week or two ago. But there were several things like that that were going, and I was like, good on them. It's not just all about the big, huge, although those are fun, it's not just all about the big, huge events, and it's some things that get back to the heart of Star Trek and what it means to so many people.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, without sounding corny, but yeah.
Well, I mean, it's always inspired people, and that's the great thing about Star Trek. I remember I don't know if you ever saw the website, but it was like buildtheenterprise.org, I think it was, with the guy who laid out like a crazy plan to build a working version of the Enterprise, but that would basically just be like a transport from here to Mars or here to the moon, and it would mine the asteroid belt and basically be a space station. And he had it like laid out. He had it like, we can do it with the taxes. Uh-huh. Over 20 years, there's definitely going to be, budget for it. And everything's gonna be triple redundant. Like, he was like an actual engineer, and he put a ton of work into that website. So
and then
like,
what happened?
And I haven't looked at the website in a while.
I was just gonna say, and what do you think, Lydia?
I wonder if that was too long before Kickstarter and Indiegogo. Maybe we need to get a crowd campaign going for that. I don't know.
I think it was just mostly posing the idea that, like, this is something we can do. Like, it's not feasible in the actual crowdfunding arena. It would need to be, like, something that was, like, commissioned by, NASA.
Someone legit.
Someone with very deep pockets over a long period of time.
Well, and then it would have to be licensed. So it would have to be like CBS licensing NASA.
Yeah.
Forget your little Estes model rocket Enterprise from the 70s or the 80s or whatever, This is the real thing.
But like part of his thesis was just that, like, look, this is – the reason I would like to see this happen one day is that Star Trek inspired people, and that having a ship that's in the shape of the Enterprise would be, great for triple redundancy, and it would be great for just the way it could inspire people just by seeing something like that built, in space.
Yeah, but I mean, is the Enterprise really? Like, if I recall correctly, the Enterprise is not a ship that was ever supposed to, like, land on the ground. Like, it's something that stays in space, and you take a shuttle to and from it, right?
Oh, no, this would have a shuttle. This would not land.
Okay, well, then I was going to say, people aren't really going to see it then in, like, person or anything.
You could probably see it. Like, I mean, you'd see photographs of it. You probably see it, like,
you probably would be able to – you can't see it, like, orbiting or anything. But, I mean, I get your meaning. I just – I liked a lot of the, like, Star Wars shuttles that – where, like, the one with, I don't remember what it's called, but it has the wings that fold up that, like, Darth Vader goes in and stuff.
The Tiberium shuttle,
Yeah, I can just imagine, like, them actually making a shuttle like that and people just flocking to it to, like, be in the Tiberius shuttle. So, because I don't think there are really any iconic Star Trek shuttles, are there? Like, I mean, just little transport shuttles that take you from the planet to the ship. I can't think of any.
I mean, the Delta
ships that are iconic.
That is. Well, no, every era, I mean, starting with the Galileo, every era had shuttlecraft. I mean.
Well, true, but what I meant was a particular design or shape that is iconic, like the Enterprise is iconic.
The Delta Flyer from Voyager is probably about as hot roddy or, like,
probably
cool looking as Star Trek shuttlecraft got.
Okay, I'm sorry, guys, but I would just say that to a huge chunk of the population, the Galileo Type F shuttlecraft is pretty iconic itself. The butter dish type thing. But okay. That's just me.
Oh no, but I mean, like if you're talking about sleek and cool, like the Delta Flyer was very cool looking. If underused, but
what do you mean they like leaned on that thing for two or three seasons?
Yeah, but you never saw anything else. Well, that was the last show.
Well, you were lucky to see a shuttle at all in Voyager, wasn't it? The ever-evolving shuttle.
They all got destroyed. Tuvok crashed, like, six of them.
Was it Tuvok?
Tuvok lost a couple. B'Elanna lost a couple. I'm not sure if Tom lost a couple. I mean, he's the pilot, so you'd think he would, but who knows? I can't remember.
Space is vast, and just because you think you put that shuttle back where you left it, it doesn't always help. How many times did I tell you to put that shuttle back when you were done with it, Mr. Paris?
But, Daddy, you're an admiral and I'm a rebellious kid.
So talking about shuttles, Larry, I was really, really fascinated to get online and read about your Enterprise in Space project that I thought was super, super cool. Just the whole, you know, inspiring kids and our next generation to, you know, participate in different experiments and projects and basically, you know, fuel innovation and actually send all these things up into space in a little spacecraft or an orbiter, technically, if I recall correctly.
Yes.
For a week. But tell us a little bit more about that project, like what you hope to achieve with that and what it is.
Well, thank you for bringing it up. And it is an awesome project, and it's worldwide in scope, actually. That's what we're getting to with contact all the continents. And I have to say up front, though, I work on the team for it, but it's not my project. There was a fan in Oregon who was a big astronomer. He's not even a professional physicist astronomer, but he's a big space buff, as so many people are. Real science and a big sci-fi fan of Trek and everything else. And just one day was watching Star Trek and thought, gee, it's too bad that there never was a real ship named Enterprise so far. Mm-hmm. Anyway, because, you know, the space shuttle Enterprise was just a drop ship test ship, right?
Yeah.
And in fact, after all the hoo-ha of the letter writing campaign to name it Enterprise, a lot of people like within a year or two were like, why did we name the first one that will never really fly Enterprise instead of waiting? But no, it was his idea, Sean Case, to have something that really worked and actually fly a craft named Enterprise. And then after starting to build out a network of people for opinions and to help with it, they came up with the idea of, you know, not just having a stunt thing or a balloon or something, but actually have a working craft. And if that was going to be, what would be the best way to do it? And exactly what you said, do something for kids and something that's inspiring and something that's future leaning. And when we say kids, not really kids, but you know, through grad school, but students of all ages, from kindergarten to, I said, from preschool to post school, and you know, and have it be around the world and have it be crowdfunded, not like a typical Kickstarter, Indiegogo or something, because it would be ongoing.
Yeah.
But the big cool thing would be that you would have room for 100 or more student projects. And I say projects of experiments, because the education people, there's engineering and there's education, and they've got these all-star people who are volunteering time. Eventually we'll get some kind of a salary, just because it's going to become a huge thing again. But people have been put in 4 and 5 years of sweat equity so far, because a lot of people have been working on it longer than I have. I got pulled in to help promote it and spread the word. Yeah. But the nuts and bolts people on the education side and the engineering side have been working on this for 3 or 4 years, the team that Sean put together. And Lynn Zielinski, who's like 2-time NASA Space Science Teacher of the Year, taught high school physics, and her army of like-minded teachers and award-winning people, she supervised student experiments on space shuttles and on ground launch rockets already. So she's all tied into this. And they're designing this not just – a contest for kids and, you know, again, kindergarten through grad school, but for it to be not just STEM, but STEAM, what they call STEAM, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. So whatever discipline you're in, it doesn't have to just be the science kids. And for it to be worldwide, there's as many languages they can get into. So Europe, India, China, you know, Latin America, Africa, as many countries as they can. We had a spaceship design contest, and if the fact that they hadn't been 18, the winner, one of the finalists, were twin high school girls from Romania.
Wow.
That's awesome.
So you know, who heard about it and got in. And it was one of the, right out of the gate, and it only went for about 3 months. And we have a volunteered winning design, Stanley von Medve. So it is called Enterprise, but it's not obviously a Star Trek Enterprise, but it's the NSS Enterprise, because the National Space Society, which is one of the two, like there's Planetary Society, National Space, one of the big civilian lobbying groups for Congress, and also just activist groups to push us down the path toward what we have to do to get into space in a real way, in a nuts and bolts way. They took it on to sponsor it as this huge project, and it's hopefully for launching down the road 4 or 5 years. Now, what's happened since it got going with this awesome idea that turned you on is we've had real world space industry. You know, the whole startup space private industry thing is Made in Space, which just got a contract, and SpaceX and I'm going to be mad here because I didn't have like the 12 names of people so far, but lots of – there's a woman that has a PBS series, a space science series for kids called Janet Planet and Janet Ivy. And she's aboard with helping get the word out. And there's just all kinds of partners have come along. One guy – one company called Value Spring is working on an artificial intelligence computer beyond Siri, beyond Watson – you know, that's actually more like the computer that we saw on the Enterprise, especially on the Next Generation, you know, with Majel doing the voice, where it's interactive and it's not just a robot, but it actually keeps data and retrieves it. And they're working on that. And when they heard about us, and they'd already called it Enterprise Mind. And so when they heard about us, they wanted to partner. And so we're working with them for it to be part of the spacecraft, both for the controller and so, say, the student teams on the ground can have a vocal interface and keep up with their experiments for the week or however long the budget comes out to keep it up there. So there's all these people that have come up with materials and aerospace, and we've so far in the last just 9 months since this kind of burst on the scene of the science world, we've gotten $27.5 million of in-kind pledges and people offering to either cut the rate or launch for free. So we've got all kinds of, you know, we have like a $40 million budget, and it's been added to now because we've had so many in-kind offers that now we're talking about having it up longer, having, you know, more with it. But the actual 8-foot model was designed through a contest, and it'll be built. And we've just had a company called Made in Space offer to 3D print it for free, the 8-foot, the mainframe.
Oh, wow. That's
so awesome. So people are getting really excited about this. The one end of it is we haven't had a big, you know, money machine of social media to get the word out the way we want to. And that's what I'm doing. And we're coming up on a whole new convention year, and not just conventions, sci-fi conventions, which is kind of what I'm helping with, and getting out to some of the celebrities to spread the word. But, you know, the science conventions and the teacher conventions and just, you know, every burg and nook and cranny. So one of the big things is volunteers. So anybody hearing this, if you can do anything from take flyers to a local convention or teacher conference or stand out in front of your local college football game this fall or something, you know, whatever, with the information for local students and teachers and parents, all the way up to helping us with social media or marketing, you know, art, graphics, or any of the professional level things like, you know, legal and engineering, of course.
Yeah.
And or if you're in some part of the world, if you're a translator and you can handle different languages. So we've got all those things open, and it's enterpriseinspace.org, and I'll stop going on a rant here. But it really is exciting. The basic idea has the basic effect that it had on you, Lydia. People just go, oh my God, this is
It seems like a really cool thing. And I think something about how you could have like a like hopefully they'll have like some kind of like computer iPad screen or something where like people can like wave and see themselves, see their picture on the Enterprise or something like that, like have some sort of link going on.
Yeah. Well, the initial idea, because Sean wanted to keep this very grassrootsy and very affordable for everybody and around the world, and rather than, you know, like Kickstarters and things sometimes get all crazy and people start worrying about what level they're giving and there's, you know, a perk level, and that's fine, and some people get off on that. But the basic idea of this was what was driving it. And initially, and we still do, the whole pitch was, hey, give $20 one time, and if you're in the U.S., it's tax deductible even because we're a nonprofit, a 501c3. And you can give more if you like, but the basic thing was if you give $20 at the site at enterpriseinspace.org, your immediate gratification is you get a link and you can print out a certificate that says you're a virtual crew member of the first Enterprise in Space, see? But what also happens is your name goes on a chip and it flies, and this is a retrieved – this is going to re-enter and be retrieved with all the data and the experiments. And then it's going to go on tour and wind up in a major – space museum, and we started to talk with the Smithsonian Air and Space Museum about having it be there. Yeah, but after a tour,
maybe next to the Enterprise that they're restoring now.
Well, since the Enterprise is there, the real quote unquote air quote Enterprise is there because it is an inspiration. It's not an actual space vehicle, you know, capsule or a plane, but it's an inspiration to the dreamers who dream the future and then make it so.
Yeah,
exactly.
So this would be kind of the same thing. But so what I was going to say real quick was you get your name on the chip and you can go and you can visit it when it's on tour and you'd see that. We've now added some other levels. So now there are higher levels where there are more perks. And what you talked about was one thing we're talking about where, like, it will deploy tethered items for experiments, and one can be a camera that will shoot back, and we have some portals in the craft. And you can see the design. It's all up at the site.
What's that again for our listeners?
Yeah, it's enterpriseinspace.org.
And okay.
You can read all about it. We'll have some more contests coming. Down the line, we'll have a design, like a logo patch kind of contest. But you can get the education department is building out their part of the site big time because they're going to start presenting at the spring conferences for teachers so they can take it back like for the fall for the people on that kind of a cycle. But also there's an area for media and there's an area for people to volunteer and say, well, here's what I can do and here's the scale. I'd like to do something close by, or, hey, I can help you online, or, hey, I'm a doctor, lawyer, you know, political chief, and whatever, and I can help on that level. So it's all to the good. But yeah, we're putting in more levels of giving for people that really want to do that, and the wave, seeing yourself wave out the portal of the first Enterprise in space with picture of you waving is one of them.
Well, one thing I was really interested in, I know you said this is a chance for 100 kids from many different ages to send their experiments to space. I wasn't quite clear on. Is the cool thing just that it's a thing that they made in a ship that goes to space, or is this an experiment that depends upon it being in space, like some sort of experiment that like measures something in space? Like experiments.
We're talking about that. We're talking about something that needs to be in space. Now, when we talk about kindergartners in first grade, they're obviously not going to be studying, you know, like dynamic thermomolecular temperatures of radiation bands through the Van Allen belt or something. But at different levels, and that's what Lynn and her whole education team are doing, things at every appropriate grade level and school level, K, elementary, middle school, high school, college, and postgraduate. Mm-hmm. And obviously the harder core things are going to be the high school, college, postgrad, as we think of hardcore experiments and projects. But even and this is something that Sean, as the founder, and Lynn and the whole team are very key on, is really have this not be just – it's so science geeky, but really have it be for kids and people of persuasions and interests across the board, because the idea being that this is being inspired by the best of science fiction, the future-looking, the optimistic, forward-looking science fiction led by Star Trek, but also Ray Bradbury and just all the – all the, hey, we're going to live in the future, positive aspects of going forward. And just like any frontier, right now we're into the whole, well, it's the test pilots and it's the engineers doing this. And we've, through the space shuttle, we got into, sadly with Chris McAuliffe, but we did gradually get to where we have people who are specialists in a field and they go take astronaut training. But just like, opening up the Western frontier in the Americas, it starts off being the scouts and the military guys, and then eventually you have the school teachers, and you have the businessmen, and then
the settlers,
and you have everybody, and that's when, the farmers, and that's when you really know that you're colonizing the frontier, because it's not the frontier anymore. And so, with an eye toward that, that's part of the reason why the big, broad band of that, and to have as many kids from, I say kids, students as possible. Yes, students. So there'll be art. So things with gravity for art and music and kind of projecty things that will compose and play with gravity and radiation and light, even in the arts and even in the humanities, because we didn't want those areas to be left out of the excitement of looking forward to a future in space.
I can imagine like maybe a plastic box with some sort of piece of 3D art in it that you don't see the piece of art until it's in zero G, and all of a sudden everything floats up, and then you can see the piece of artwork or something like that's as an artist, that's kind of what I'm imagining.
Well, it wouldn't really what they're talking about. I mean, one of the ideas is not so much that you're not sending up a static finished piece. You're going to send up something that's going to create itself.
Yeah.
Like bags of pigment paint will pop or explode, and then they'll go onto something, or gravity will affect something that's going to make an impression, a physical or a visual. Or the sounds of space will get recorded and become a musical composition like or something like that.
I watched the video for the Alley AI, and the guy
Let
was
your
like,
imagination run wild.
The guy was like, can we get a mosquito in space and watch if it doesn't fly good?
I was like,
that's kind of interesting. Although, like, how are you going to keep the mosquito alive?
to
get up there. I'm like,
well,
it's interesting.
I mean,
it doesn't very long.
Yeah, but I mean, they've done things with animals and what's the thing? It can be an invert. I think it's an invertebrate, or down. They're not sending up any more complex life forms than that. So no dogs and no lycas, no ham chimps,
no actual guinea pigs.
Uh-huh. Right. The craft itself is right now designed to be 8 feet long. So.
Well, you know what this reminds me of? I'm not sure if you've seen the movie Tomorrowland.
No, I haven't. I wanted to, but I haven't.
But I mean, did you kind of see the advertising? The basic concept is just a girl who discovers some sort of advanced society that nobody, knew was there or whatever. I mean, I don't want to spoil the plot for anybody who actually saw it, because I saw it and I loved it. Uh-huh. It's very positive. It's very forward thinking. It's all about how, as a society, as a world culture, if we focus on being positive and feeding the good parts of who we are as humans, the innovations, the reaching forward, embracing everyone as a united whole, as opposed to being divisive or fighting over resources, that sort of thing,
right.
We can create a positive future, even if there are stuff that we're worried about, like global warming or, using up resources. So it's just a very positive message that I enjoyed that reminded me of Star Trek, and I feel this project kind of echoes that.
Well, totally. And the point is, as we found out, the original space race to the moon, the original years of NASA, was politically motivated. It was the space race with the Russians and who's going to put a bomb in orbit first,
Cold
and
War.
We can't let that happen. Cold War. But what did wind up happening, it did have those roots to it, but for the first time in maybe human history, one of the positives that came out of the space program ongoingly, but we especially remember that first burst out of the gate with the original Wright stuff astronauts and, Mercury, Gemini, Apollo, and then the space shuttle too. But the original thing there was, that was the first time maybe in human history that war had not been the driving engine of technology. Lots of peacetime applications came out of, but it usually took a war to be the human motivator to make people up
for progress.
Eventually a lot of peaceful uses came out of things, but communication and technologies and electronics and physics and materials and all of that thing usually were driven by how can we get the edge up on our enemy. And the space race, the early years of NASA in the States, was the first time that push for technology, and all the materials and all the ways the knowledge base in a very practical way was pushed by something peaceful and something optimistic. And I think, that was the years that Star Trek was birthed.
Yeah.
Was that optimism. So that's all of a piece. And that's why people look back at all of this set piece kind of, I think, so fondly. And you're absolutely right. That's what we want to recapture. And today there are so many, everybody's on their phones because they have social media and there's so many distractions. And the days, in TV, it's like there's not three networks where you have shows with huge ratings, and shows used to be canceled for ratings that TV shows now would die for. And we used to have a time when every space launch, people would drop what they were doing and run in to watch the launch, just because and there is so much that we have a crowded attention span, so much stuff is packing our, and that's great that we're so globalized. But then again, so sometimes there's some of us that wish we could get back to having that was easy excitement.
Yeah.
Simplistic. I don't mean like kids get off my lawn. I mean,
go inside and play your Game Boy.
Yeah. People were excited, and it was obvious that they were excited about the future, embracing it. And what eventually happened, even in the 70s when the last Apollos were canceled and we kind of quote unquote settled for the space shuttle instead of going on to Mars immediately, was that people were saying, well, we're spending all this money and we should be spending it here on the Earth for our problems instead of up in space. And what people didn't get until years later, and now we get it, is that like every dollar they invested in the first 10 years of NASA came back with like $8 of, we got microwave ovens. We got baking surfaces for pay. I mean, we got cell phones. I mean, the whole digital computer revolution happened because of that spurt in the 60s. Or it happened 150 years faster or 100 years faster than it would have happened. So now we get it that every dollar invested that way not only yielded so much in the past, it is, you know, now we're orbiting satellites that are telling us about global climate change and making it in your face where you can't ignore the data. So, I mean, so people are getting that, yeah, just because we're spending it on orbital craft and space research doesn't mean that it's not having effects here on the ground. And people get that now more than they used to.
It's good to see that because, I mean, it's sad that space seems to kind of like not be cool lately. But I'm glad this project is out there and starting to inspire people again and getting them back into this idea of that this is important.
Yeah.
Hey, I want something on Mars. I want to be able to jump on a ship and go into hyperspace and jump over to Mars and put on a suit and, you know, jump around. I mean, I'd Star Wars, and I have to confess, I'm a little more of a Star Wars fan than a Star Trek fan.
Yes.
Because that's what that
you
I
let
know.
Her in the door.
I'm sorry.
No, I know. Hey,
everyone's going to hang up on me now.
I'm just saying that's what my parents kind of had around. Because, you know, what your family has around growing up is kind of what you get used to growing up. But I mean, Star Trek.
Okay, so we shoot your parents. Okay.
Yeah. Totally anyway, kidding. Moving on.
Or
moving on.
They would just condition them.
Totally kidding, because you put it out there on the silver platter.
But just the idea of being able to get into a spaceship and go somewhere, like that's not just empty space. I mean, I love it, I'm totally excited about that. That one day we can go places. Right. I don't know what's out there, but. We can go try and find it. I'm waiting for faster than light. I'm waiting for the hyperspace. As soon as we figure out hyperspace, then we can get to all those places.
Yeah. I think she means warp drive, David. But okay.
Yes.
You know.
I know.
Or wait. Maybe she means slipstream drive.
Stargates.
Oh, okay.
You know, like the slipstream drive that they're trying to get on Voyager to work. That's kind of like hyperspace, right? Maybe.
Although you said, I see when you said Stargate, aside from the whole Stargate franchise, there's a difference to me between Stargate, which is like a physical. Well, no, I guess the Stargates were built. But in some of the science fiction franchises, they depend on like organic, you know, like basically warp gateways to hop around. I think the old Buck Rogers TV series did that. They would use those versus something that you've created yourself, like a warp drive or a hyperlight drive or whatever. Yeah. If there are gateways, if there are vortexes or whatever that can be mapped and charted, like on Clue Board, the secret passage to conservatory or something. If there's something that exists and you can harness that, that's great. But I think we should be under our own control. But
I don't know. Black holes fascinate me.
You have to survive it first before you can be
fascinated. That's true.
Yeah. But once you get stuck in one, all you have to do is look at the backside of a bunch of bookshelves. I mean, that's got to be a hell of an existence to live in. It's like, I can only look at the back of the books.
Well, but seriously, one thing we're talking about people and public attitudes about space. Maybe it's because since Star Trek and even like Galactica haven't been on TV, there hasn't been a real space series on. Although hopefully that's
in. Dark
matter.
No, but I'm talking about tied to us real life space vehicles in space going exploring and all that. But what I'm saying is maybe because of that dearth on TV, we've had this rise the last few years. Look at how many space movies of varying, you know, relationships to actual here and now. But from Gravity to Interstellar and now The Martian. And The Martian, it's like reading the NASA best plans right now playbook, down to the fact that they had sent over, you know, they had sent gear and equipment over. You know, it wasn't like one big expedition to Mars. They had been sending pieces because of the weight and the throw and the launch bit. So the whole point of they were like the second or third crew, and they were dealing with stuff that had been sent over and was sitting unused in between visits. And I mean, much less the fact that he survived by he knows, Doctor, he has reasoned it out. I mean, back to Arena there, but the fact that the hero wins and survives, not because he's the biggest or the strongest or whatever, because he's the smartest.
Yeah.
And he uses science and he uses his wits. And I just thought that was a wonderful, powerful message to have now, on top of just the event. And it can be plenty dramatic with somebody paying attention to their science advisor, you know, as opposed to
Well, I believe the guy who wrote The Martian is a scientist. So, I mean, he was drawing from personal, I mean, not personal experiences. He hasn't been to Mars, but I mean, he drew from.
We don't know that.
Right. And not that the mind bending adventure of Interstellar. I mean, people. I remember the famous Neil deGrasse Tyson and others who were critiquing. You know, very dramatic, and it was kind of an inward. It winds up being an inward journey in Gravity. Mm-hmm. That like Interstellar was obviously kind of metaphysical, you know, but grounded in reality. But Martian was just pretty much front to back. You know, hardcore. Here's the adventure of real space vehicles from Earth within the next 10, 20, 30 years of not being that far off.
I mean, it was mostly like – it seemed to me like it was almost like Apollo 13, but just
– yes. You know,
this is what might happen. It's like fictional Apollo 13.
There were so many Apollo 13 moments. Even the score was like, oh, there's a little
– yeah. It was very – I heard some people on Twitter or Facebook were like, oh, was that real? Did that happen? I'm like, no. Because it did feel so much like Apollo 13 that people thought it was a thing that actually had happened. I'm like, no, we've not gone to Mars.
Which unfortunately kind of speaks to the non-education of kids these days, because they should know we can't get to Mars yet. Believe me, we would know if we could get to Mars.
I'm sorry you slept through the whole Ares Mars program. Golly, that was some exciting 30 years there. You know.
And then there's movies like Prometheus that just kind of you all seen Prometheus?
It's so bad.
But the idea though, like it's a horror movie about people going to what planet was it that they went to? Was it a real planet or was it one they made up? Can't remember. I think it's one of the planets in our solar system. And somehow discovers a long lost alien race that isn't as dead as they thought it was, and then you get into the whole horror doom kind of thing where the evil creature is following them around.
Well, I've got an issue that an alien race would visit every ancient series of people, make a map on their cave walls to the weapons facility. Like, why? Like, I mean, like it just the movie falls apart in so many ways for me. Like that being like one of the most basic ones. Like, hey, look. Here's a map to our weapons facility.
But the preview was good.
Yeah. Well, the box office kind of reflected all these comments. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. But my point being that we've had some really high budget, well done, increasingly sophisticated for what they assume the audience knows. Space
scientific.
Movie. Yes, space movies. Scientific. Yes. Yeah.
I loved Gravity, Interstellar, and The Martian. They were all fantastic.
And, I mean, we kind of had that. I mean, the one that pops to mind, aside from, like, you know, 2001, way back in the day in 2010, but, like, not First Contact from Star Trek, but Contact from Carl Sagan's novel.
Oh, yeah.
Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster, Tain the Wind.
Yeah. That analyzed the whole – everything from, you know, alien contact to how it would come to politics and the religious – the really fundamentalist religious backlash to the fact that there's life elsewhere, and I mean, just it had all that brought into it too as a grounded, and you know, had a fantastical science, but if it's coming from an alien technology, then that's what it is. But anyway,
how it works. Yeah,
yeah.
So how long has Enterprise in Space like been like ongoing? Because I mean, you said there was the education side, and then there was like the technological side for the ship itself.
The team had been building, and these are all people doing this for free as volunteer hours, which is what astounded me. They reached out to me it's been over a year now. So it was like in mid 2014, I guess. And we had a soft launch technically late in 2014, but it really picked up steam last spring. There's an annual space development conference that the National Space Society sponsors. And when they did their first big presentation to that group, which is the space industry people and the private space companies that are emerging, and you know, NASA people are there, and all the spinoff sciences and the education tied into that, and the real world people trying to have businesses depending on space, and these people getting contracts from NASA to build private craft and also, you know, handle systems, that whole community just went bonkers when it was kind of unleashed last spring. And that's where a lot of this in-kind help and people wanting to help. But we still need our big ticket donations from groups who want to do this. And we still need our grassroots support to help us, you know, get to those building blocks. The original cry was that Sean had was, hey, 2 million people around the world give $20 and we're there.
Yeah.
But that's kind of a long
game. Yeah, get that 2 million people to. Yeah.
Yeah. And it really is. And a lot of part of it is, again, this team had worked for 3 or 4 years just working on the nuts and bolts of it before they even started thinking about promoting and launching. So they'd just been working on their own before it went out to the public. But now the hard thing is everybody has that same reaction, like you did, Lydia. Everybody's excited. Mm-hmm. It's just like getting people to turn the corner and go to the website, yeah, plunk down their $20, which you watch people send these Kickstarters for these, you know, like movie projects. Excuse me. And those go off. You know, people get all excited, and that's like a month and the ticking clock, and, oh, get in before the deadline, and, oh, I want this. And we're not about that. So I still think the basic idea motivates people, but we still need a little motivator to kick people over. So everybody listening tonight, just hop over to enterpriseinspace.org and plunk down your $20 and, you know, PayPal or whatever, and get your certificate, get your name on the chip if you want to go higher. There's all kinds of perks now to go higher with rewards. But the basic thing is just, you know, be on the first real enterprise in real space.
Imagine being able to tell your kids about that in 50 years.
Exactly.
You're like,
exactly.
Yeah, you can go see your mom, your dad's name at the Smithsonian. You know, let's go on a field trip. Let's go see mom's name.
Yeah.
You know, at the Smithsonian.
Oh, yeah, that'd be
And you know what? I should throw this in, too, because part of this is, you know, if you're a kid listening to this or you're a teacher, you know, please write in and get the information about bringing that to your classroom. If you're a kid, you know, write in and get the information for your teacher to have, because that's what they're working around the clock. We call them our education superstars, and they're finding partners to help get the word out and get this out and get it to other countries. But one of the things is there are contests where people can send in, students can send in projects to get them. Like I said, when the space shuttle was running, Lynn oversaw those different project types. And there are people that you can get on launches of craft now, and European Space Agency, and the Indian, and the Chinese, too, aside from just NASA. But it's kind of a double-edged sword, because you can get into that, and then congratulations, you've won. Now, here's how much it costs. Like, you have to pay your own way once you
pay
get accepted.
Pay your own way, yeah.
And part of Enterprise in Space is any student that gets their project accepted, they're not out of pocket for it. It's not just buying the space on the craft. The plan, the budget is to have people, you know, brought to wherever the central assembly place is. You come in, you load your project, your experiment in the orbiter, and then you're there for the launch. And then, you know, then the meetup time where you come and retrieve your data if you have something that needs to be retrieved physically.
Yeah.
So it plays all – you're not out of pocket. It's not like, congratulations, you won. Now you're bankrupt. Or now you have to go out and, like, you know, bake sale your way into being able to do it. Like, you know, kids going to, you know, the band or the whatever, or the, you know, mathletes or something. Yeah. So
it's really something that's built to help the kids and people participate by finding more support in general, because it's nonprofit, as opposed to more like a money making. Oh, hey, you're in now. Give us all this money so we can afford to send you.
Right,
that's good.
Right. And again, if you're American, it's tax deductible, so it's a 501c3. So
that's nice. Awesome. Enterprise in Space sounds like a really fantastic just project that's going on.
Yeah,
right, it's going on.
I'm kind of tempted. I want my name on a chip.
But again, we've been talking about it for a few months, and everybody goes, "That's incredible!" But we just need everybody to go and put their $20 on and get us there. Yeah.
Yeah, so get out there and let's get this in space for real, guys.
And again, the website is enterpriseinspace.com.
.org.
Okay, sorry, .org. Yeah, or .org. you just Google it, Enterprise in Space.
Yep.
It'll pull up, I'm sure.
And there's, you know, there's Enterprise in Space Facebook, and the Twitter is at EnterpriseSat for satellite.
Because probably it was already taken or something. Enterprise in Space was taken.
Yeah, or the link or whatever. So that's been a kind of a renewed had a lot of life here the last few months. And we just, the partner, you go to the page, there's like 12 logos of companies, big and small. But the small ones are not small, who are all excited and want to help out and partner and be part of this too. So, which that's incredible. And there's more happening. We had one came aboard that I don't think we can publicly say yet, but I will just say it rather than being a new startup, it's an old company that I bought some of their products when I was a kid.
Oh, awesome.
So, which is kind of like,
well, that was ages and ages.
Uh-huh.
Oh, don't age shame. Come on.
You know, I rode my rubber band bike out to no, but it's, and they're still very much there. But I mean, they're just pretty much down home you know, baseball, hot dogs, and apple pie for anybody that did anything in science when you were a kid. And and they're going to be a partner and do some exciting stuff with us now. So that's coming down. So you should be there. Yeah, but so you know, go to the Facebook and get on the newsletter and do the Twitter. And most of all, you know, take your $20 and plop it down. It's nothing. And it's not like they're – it's a huge campaign and they'll come back to you in a year or two. This is the – you can always add on or you can start bigger than that. But it's not really asking a lot of people. We're trying to be broad. Trying to be broad, you know. For 5 years down, 4 to 5 years down the line for the launch. So,
yeah,
awesome.
So, I was just gonna say it sounds like a good investment, but you know, go ahead, yes. David.
Oh yeah, definitely. Right after the last time we talked, I think literally the day after the episode went live, there was a big piece of news in the Star Trek world, which was the announcement of a new series.
Oh wow, that was before that. Yeah.
So it was like days, like you emailed me like the links and stuff like that to put in the show notes, and you're like, this big news happened. You know, I was crazy busy. So the only thing that I know is from what I've read that Alex Kurtzman is actually executive producer on the show, and it's not directly tied to 2009, but Star Trek in the Dark, not in the Darkness, but Beyond. Like,
well, I didn't have any big insight about it. It was a thunder shock to me. I think it was a thunder shock to a lot of people, and I know some of the different arms of CBS knew it was happening, but I think even they were surprised that it got announced when it got announced even. But it's after a little bit of sinking in that day, you know, I kind of looked at the telltale signs, and it was obvious pretty quickly that it was driven by business, not by the content. It was kind of like business first, content later, and I'm not knocking that. It's just like that's what drove it. It's just like when UPN launched as a fifth network, they looked around and said, well, what's our biggest property? Oh, Star Trek. Star Trek will be the flagship, and we'll – instead of Voyager being another syndicated series, we'll have it be our lead-in for our network. And that's what this is. CBS is in the second generation of the streaming who are now saying, well, this is – thank you, Netflix and Hulu and Amazon Prime. But now it's been a few years. You've set the business model. And why should we give middlemen a chunk of our profit? We could be doing our own content and doing our own original programming. You know, who knew 5 years ago that Netflix would be winning Emmys for original, you know, series?
That's mind-blowing, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, 10 years ago, it was still kind of mind-blowing that HBO and the premium channels would be winning Emmys for original, you know, Sopranos and then Game of Thrones and all of that. And then, like, right on the heels of that, now it's like, really? Because this didn't even Netflix didn't exist 10 years ago, you know? So, and it's come from just being an online, you know, Blockbuster video rental store to putting out their own content. So the media world has evolved so fast. I mean, a lot of us looking for the return of Star Trek eventually on episodes, on TV, loosely said now. It was, we were looking at it maybe being since CBS owned Showtime, having it be a premium channel thing. And it wouldn't have to worry about ratings, and they could be more adult, and they wouldn't do this ridiculous 26 episodes a year. They could just do 8 or 10 or 12, 18 maybe, but you know, have them be really high quality and take time and do them right. And it's almost like about the time we were talking about that, well, here comes the whole streaming model. But what pissed people off, I think, in a lot of ways was they're thinking right now they already have Netflix, they already have Hulu, or they already have Amazon Prime. And the fact that CBS wanted to start their own, and people think, oh, I've got to pay extra for it. But that's where everything is going. And another 2 or 3 years, you'll look back and think, well, that was pretty ancient history to think that at the time.
Yeah.
That everything is becoming more piecemeal, and people that were griping about their cable bill getting to be $150 or whatever, well, this is what's – now you're not paying for all the foreign language and the shopping and the – you know, the religion channels that you don't ever watch or whatever, or the sports channels you never watch. Now you're going to just pay for what you want. And, you know, but I was thrown. I was so into the details of that. The whole thing about people being mad that it was a streaming extra pay service kind of blindsided me. But, you know, the whole thing of it being Alex Kurtzman doing it, I kind of realized real fast was he was a quantity that was known to be associated with Trek. Because what got to me was what they weren't saying when they announced it, which told me that they didn't have a lot of detail yet. They didn't even say how many episodes it was going to be.
Yeah, I mean,
so some of that's still being figured out.
Like, we really know nothing other than that Alex Kurtzman's working on it. We don't know what universe it's going to be set in. We don't know, like, when it's going to be in the timeline. Like, we know, like, nothing other than, like, it's coming and Alex Kurtzman's show.
It's coming January 2017.
Yep.
And it's going to be streaming, and that you can. And now you may see it's happened. What was it? Was it Amazon Prime that the Treks all left? As the contracts with the streamings go away, and whether they'll do it up and down the line or not.
Yeah, I wonder if it's going to drop on Netflix. Because, I mean, if it drops on Netflix too before January, then I could see – I would definitely subscribe to it before the new show comes out so I could watch my Star Trek.
Well, I mean, it's a business. It's a business. So, you know, why – again, they're wanting to not – give the cow away to everybody, or give the milk away, whatever that phrase is.
Yeah.
You know, they want to channel it into themselves and – but yeah, but the whole thing about Kurtzman, I think people are, oh, great, it's going to be a JJ. If you didn't enjoy the JJ movies, the Bad Robot movies, I think that was more about being a nameplate. And I think I know a couple of cases where a lot of the writers that you might the veteran Star Trek people with prior experience, they're tied up with contracts and can't come over and do it if they wanted to. And I know of at least one that wanted to preemptively wanted to be ready to jump to a new show.
Ronald D. Moore, maybe.
Not in the case of a contract, but somebody else. But don't get me guessing now. I won't say that. But
okay, I would personally like to see Ronald D. Moore. Come back.
But you could go down a list of four or five guys.
Oh yeah, you know, Michael Piller. You know, something like that too. So.
Well, now if Michael Piller could come back from the grave and run a Star Trek, I think we'd all really love that.
Hey, you know, The Walking Dead.
Oh, okay. This suddenly took a dark turn. Okay. Well,
you know, we had a death episode we talked about when you were on here last, so we gotta keep our you know, things going straight.
Thematic,
you know?
Thing.
Yeah, thematic, yeah. You know.
But like Brian Fuller or Ira Bear or
Steven, yeah.
Yeah. A lot of the Trek vets. But what I'm saying is and there's plenty of hot the thing that's different now than say like when Next Generation came, we've had a whole generation of Trek people as it started to happen toward the end of even partway through Next Generation, but all the way through Voyager and into Enterprise, what happened was eventually it wasn't a choice of do you have a professional writer who doesn't know anything about Trek. Trek had so permeated the culture that we had enough professional writers coming up who were quality writers who knew Trek already, and it wasn't this either-or choice. You know, or, oh, we need one Trek consultant in there to keep all the writers, you know, on track and not do bonehead things for the for the canon and continuity in the franchise. So there's plenty of, you know, Trek marinated professional writers out there, hopefully, who would jump in without it just being somebody we know. But they haven't announced who that would be yet, and I kind of think that Alex Kurtzman was like a nameplate name that, he may just be like a Dick Wolf and take his 5% We haven't had any more news since. And the biggest thing, again, is what we haven't heard, and there's still being a kind of – and you know that the minute they have – not spoiler news, but at least who's doing it and how many episodes and all that. And are they going to shoot? Are they going to shoot it in L.A.? Are they going to be in Vancouver?
I mean,
that's the thing that I'm really curious about.
I don't think they're going to shoot it. I don't think they're going to say anything until Star Trek Las Vegas.
Well, that's kind of – here's a thing I said somewhere else is if you look at – you know, a lot of things are different. But one of the same things is you still takes X amount of time to build a set and cast and do X amount of shooting for X amount of whatever. And if you look at Voyager and DS9, which were both January premieres, they were shooting their pilots in August and in September, right?
Yeah.
September for Voyager because the whole delayed Janeway thing screwed them up.
Yeah.
But so by the time of that, they'd be shooting, which means they have to have a format, a casting, you know, designing the look and decide all the decisions about what format and what timeline and what era.
Yeah.
So, and then design the stuff and then build the sets and then staff the crew from top down. So, and they're not, this isn't like, oh, we're going to take all our TNG people and do Voyager and we're going to take half our TNG people and do DS9. And, you know, this is starting from scratch. So,
yeah.
I think by the time of Vegas, if they were doing it and holding off, there'd be so many leaks and there'd be so many ways for the word to get out that, yeah, I mean,
I hope there would be leaks, but I think they might try to keep a lid on it. I mean, they might not be able to. But,
yeah.
But
well, by the time you have – just think about – because they always want to blame like actors and the initial crew. But where the great leaks come from on something like Star Trek is like the prop maker who lives in North Carolina or the costumer who's – you know, or the licensing people who are doing action figures for the premiere and they're in New York or whatever it is. That's where the leaks come from. Those things have to go out. So unless for some reason with a streaming service you can shoot in December and have it all ready to go in January, which I don't think that's a laws of physics that I don't think has changed just because it's streaming versus network.
You still have to edit it, so I mean, yeah, even after you shoot it.
You still have to edit and post it and then let people ramp up to promote it. So, so yeah. So I don't think we're going to – we may get a ton of detail by Vegas, but some of these basic questions are going to be out long before that, I think. That's my opinion.
Oh, I mean, I'm sure you're right, but I'm just saying, like, any big official news will probably mm-hmm. be like held onto. I'm sure leaks always happen, but anything big and official, or a trailer or something, or maybe
because remember, part of this isn't just they're not trying to get ratings on a network or whatever or sign up song. They're trying to get people to sign up for the service, and this is the big thing they've staked the early success of it on. They picked the Star Trek, a new Star Trek series, after a 10-year drought, to be the motivator, you know, that gets people excited to go in and do this new thing. And for a lot of people, they're not on Netflix or Hulu or Amazon. They don't pay extra for streaming, and they haven't cut their cord yet. So this is going to be a huge, you know, motivator paradigm shift thing for a lot of people.
Yeah, for sure.
So they want the drip 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 of news and PR to get out and get people excited. They're not going to wait till the last. They're not going to hold their powder. This isn't a wait till you see the whites of their eyes thing to shoot.
Yes.
Shoot early, shoot often. Not to get violent there.
Yeah. So I saw the end of the Red Shirt Diaries, and you were in the second to last episode of that, and you were great and getting drunk. It was awesome.
Oh, well, thank you.
Even though the episode took a really sad turn.
I read the script. So yeah, props to Ashley and Jason for letting me do that. Because I'd helped them promote when they did their Kickstarter was it a Kickstarter or Indiegogo? But anyway, their crowdfund campaign, and I said I'd just like to be when you get to second season, I'd like to either be like Commodore Decker, you know, they do the wah wah Peanuts adults thing with cut off heads, and that's what I thought it would be. And I said I'd like to be Commodore Decker or like maybe one of like the tallest little short golden guy from Journey to Babel, you know, in the or a Tellarite. And then they called me and said, would you be McCoy? And I was like, well, sure. You know, cause I love McCoy and had done it for continues. And then only about 2 weeks before we rehearsed, I realized that they didn't mean Peanuts wah, wah adult, but like on camera with a head. And I'm like, oh, so I need to shave. And I need to dye my hair dark brown again and all that. And okay. But it was a hoot and they were great. And I loved the whole point of it when I first saw it. So that's why I was a big fan to start off with.
It was great. We actually had them on like two episodes after you. And then we had them on again like the week before they had the one with you on it.
Well, they're definitely double episode worthy. I shot an interview with them for Trekland blog video, and then when we had the premiere of the second season premiere party, I put it up late because I didn't want to spoil me because I was so late in the season. But
they were great, and I've stolen Jason to talk about Star Trek Beyond when that comes out, so I've already like tied him into saying that. So I'm excited.
And they have their other thing, you know, their geek history lesson and all the other things they're doing. Was it DC All Access show he does? They're great. And so, I didn't know, though, that they were going to end it until they basically decided to end it. And I'm like, oh, great. So
did you listen to –
I feel like the Deanna Troi of Red Shirt Diaries. Like, so fine. I crashed the show. Is that what it was?
Well, I don't know. Did you listen to our second episode with them? Because they came on and they told us they're talking about doing a book for to continue that.
Oh, that would be awesome.
And I was like, oh, are you going to do an audiobook? And Jason was like, that's a really good idea. I'm like, I'll listen to that. I will definitely listen to the audiobook Red Shirt Diaries. Like, it would be great if he narrated it and then, like, she just spoke her lines.
Yeah.
That would be pretty awesome.
And they could have their major actors that had done the character. You know,
if you could come back and be McCoy, that'd be awesome.
I know a great place where they could get a McCoy voice if they wanted one. Yeah.
Most definitely.
I hadn't seen them since they announced it. I hadn't physically seen them yet. So, but I know they were just tickled. Like last year in Vegas, they were just tickled to see a couple of people cosplaying Ensign Williams. And
that's
the kind of thing that just blows you. Anytime you create something, it just blows you away to see people, you know, pick it up. And it's like with the first few times I had people come up and say, I didn't think about, because I know how I was about the iconic things when I was a kid. And when I was, you know, teenager, when I was in college, and when I was, and you know, like what Bijou's concordance and the tech manuals were, and the medical reference, and the giant poster book, and all those, you know, and the original making of Star Trek book that Steve Whitfield Poe wrote. And when he came back to do the Voyager book, and it was kind of a sentimental thing, and you know, Mike Okuda and Rick Sternbach and me and people that were at the lot were all going, "Oh my God, you affected my life!" And I know he was kind of taken aback, and it's like I've had a deja vu of that a little bit, because people, "Oh my God, the Next Generation Companion! This was my favorite Christmas present of all time, and I went through 3 copies, I wore it out, and you know." So that hearing that kind of thing, it's just really great. And again, with Portal 47, that's what's cool about bringing people that a lot, you know, from 12, 15 years after we came out in 94 till the end of Enterprise, that was 10, 11 years of being kind of in a front row seat and not just having the memories of things in my head, but knowing the people to come in and bring their angle on things. So anytime I do that and people go, "Oh, this was so cool. Like, here's a whole end of, or when you watch this show, you'll never think of it the same way again." Not in a bad way, but here's a whole new dimension on, you know, or why did they do this? I wish they hadn't done. Well, here's kind of one reason why. Because they came in that day and the Klingon food had wilted in the refrigerator. So they had to go to, you know. And but, I mean, like, you know, that's just like a talk. But just hearing those kinds of things from more and more and more voices that haven't been out yet. That's what I love. And when our deep divers on Portal 47 talk about things later on, that just makes my Stardate.
That's awesome. So I know you got to go real quick soon. I don't know if you have quick answers to these last two questions. I wanted to ask you. I had some Enterprise questions I wanted to ask you. Okay. First was, why did Mind Melds give you STDs? And I mean, because I mean, like, it was like taboo, and then all of a sudden it's like, and then like everyone's doing it, and you know, TOS onward, but like, you know, like 7 years earlier, it's like, oh, if you do it, you're gonna get some kind of weird Vulcan STD. And then they also had like the, like, it's impossible for humans and Vulcans to mate when you obviously have Spock and you have B'Elanna Torres and all these other like half human, half something else.
Well,
so, like,
on your first question, okay, remember that there was a status, there was an entrenched interest on Vulcan that where things had gone off the rails, right? Where they had gone anti-Serac and you know, with Romulan interference, whatever, that they put back on track. So think of all those things, the way things had gotten off kilter in light of the status quo, the powers that be had wanted things to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
So the second one is the easy one. It's what'd you say was about either – you can say two things. Either they could have done it all along and didn't, or we've just had technology come along where you can.
You saw
Trip and T'Pol's own baby, right? And there was some – it was cloned, and there were some cloning issues there, and it died very sadly. But it wasn't like – you know, I mean, they created a war. We can't – I don't know if you know this or not, guys, but we can't technically right now fly faster than light. But apparently in 300 years we will or 200 years or whatever.
Hopefully soon.
So part of that is just the time will take care of that
issue.
Things being engineered to, you know, interrupt and harass and discourage. And that faction of people that mind melded were the people who were like direct throwbacks to – you know, it's like if there was some religion that really did have had recordings of Jesus talking, there are maybe some entities in the world that wouldn't want that to get out.
Yeah.
You know, after 1,000 years of entrenched bureaucracy or whatever going up. So, which is a tension. I'm not inventing it. I mean, that's a tension in that whole world of theology. So, of whatever stripe, of whatever religion. So, I mean, that's the kind of thing, though, that like my column in the magazine I've done for way so many years in the actual Dead Tree official magazine. Fistful of Data, that's the kind of thing that comes up and people talk about. But I have never heard anybody ask it quite that way. But that's my top of my head reaction is what you're seeing there is the end result of people manipulating things. And if you just change the frame and change change the frame, it's like, oh, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah.
Did that help at all? Did that throw any...
Yeah, a little bit, I think.
You hit me with those off the top of my head, because we did not plan this, and we have not seen each other ahead of this broadcast.
No, maybe I'll try to pitch up questions before, so we can like prepare for them next time. But I just wonder if you had any. I mean, that's all I was really looking for, is your off the top for these. Because I was like, oh, that's kind of interesting that I thought about. But I know you got to run, so I thank you so much for coming back and speaking with us tonight. It was a lot of fun.
Sure thing, guys. Thanks for letting me ramble about all this. No, I really am excited about Enterprise in Space. It was kind of a lull there for a while, but the science world is getting revved up, and I just want to make sure everybody who calls themselves a true optimistic future leaning, let's invest in our future generations and make Earth better and get off of it in a good way.
Yeah.
Fans out there will find it. You know, $20 goes out the window for all kinds of things, from coffees to action figures,
McDonald's
and movie tickets.
McDonald's before.
So that, and Portal 47 is my new hot thing. But I'm going to be at so many places around. I mean, my website has the calendar. I hope, you know, everybody, you guys are back east. I'm hopefully finally going to get back east at several events this year. That's been kind of my lightest part of the. I'm going to be in Detroit and in Chicago and hopefully in New York State at least once. So I'm really excited about that. So
that'd be great. So how can we find you online, so you can give us that information real quick, and I'll put it in the show notes as well.
Yeah. Well, the hub can be LarryNemechek.com, and Trekland blog is at TreklandBlog.com, but you can get there. Larry Nemechek's Trekland on Facebook, at Larry Nemechek on Twitter. If I can finally sit down and do it, I'm going to start an Instagram channel, platform, account, whatever you call it. And then, you know, the Con of Wrath, which you didn't even talk about, documentary here that we were filming in Houston when we talked in the monsoon, is Facebook Con of Wrath or conofwrath.com.
And
Portal 47 is portal47.net. But you can find everything through the main site too.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much for joining us again, Larry. Thank you all for listening. Live long and prosper, guys.
Joel and True.
Thank you all for listening. All our music is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or follow them on Twitter at warp11. You can find us at synthaholics.com. You can email us at synthaholics@yahoo.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at synthaholicduo. If you'd like to follow us individually, you can follow me at David_J_Duncan.
You can follow me, Aaron O'Brien, at Blackbird2004. Faith, where can they find you?
You can find me at Faith Hertzberg.
And please subscribe to us. We are on iTunes. We are on Stitcher. And if you have a chance, please rate and review so we can improve. And any feedback is welcome. And so we can make the show even better for you.
Live long and prosper, guys.
At the stars we did gaze. The next morning he left stinking of gin. Well, McCoy, my boy, come mix me a drink. Before the night's over, I'll puke in the sink. And we'll cry till we laugh, and we'll both shit our pants. You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
Thank you so much, Larry.
Guys, thank you so much. Yeah, and Lydia, it's nice to meet you.
It was really nice to meet you, Larry. I mean, I'm, as I said on the podcast, not as big of a Star Trek fan as I am Star Wars. Just I don't know as much about it, but it was really nice to learn a little bit more and really cool to hear about your project, but the project that you're helping out, the Enterprise in Space. And I think it's a really good thing to be doing. What I'm a writer myself. I'm getting ready to publish my first books in April, and just one thing I love so much is the way we use stories. Thanks you. I actually have a Kickstarter going on right now, which is how I got connected with David to help out with this tonight. But anyway, I just love how we use fiction and stories to inspire each other and society to do great things. Right. So I love stories like Star Trek that inspire those things. They're just amazing.
Well, there's been the mutual love affair between Star Trek and NASA. It's like, no, we love you more. No, we love you more. No, you've done more for humanity. No, you've done more for humanity.
Yeah.
It's been this really interesting dance, more so than most, because it's so big and identifiable. But, you know, positive science fiction has been there. So, anyway, the more you're exposed to Star Trek, the more you'll get it. I can tell you. But I'm not one of these, Star Wars or Star Trek fight people. I think that's such a ridiculous
I think they can be very complimentary.
Yeah.
They're both
most
great
people
stories.
And people tend to like one. It's very hard for anybody to say, I like all of these equal. That doesn't happen, but people still have a big comfort range.